I think we have a quorum, so we should get going. Good morning. Call the meeting to order. Hello there. It's great to see you all. I'm just going to transition straight to Emily and ask her to review and approve the meeting minutes from June and July.
So we should have our both minutes here. Give you a couple minutes to review them and ask for a motion.
I have a change, or an addition that was omitted.
Which one?
On the July minutes, page 4. About two-thirds of the way down, under the point, only half the projects seem to be claimed the 80% bar this year for compliance with the coordinated entry system. I made a comment that this is unacceptable, this rate of compliance on behalf of the programs, and that it has to improve next year. I just don't want my comment lost on that.
What we're asking today is for the committee or for the board to ratify the decisions that the executive committee made. On one item, we had a set of policies that we did not get to approve at the last meeting because we simply ran out of time. We spent the bulk of our time talking about the scoring tool, which was a really important matter. But we needed to get this out, and so the executive committee did approve that. And then we also had, after the competition NOPA came out, we had some policies and some scoring items that the committee weighed in on last time. Those were presented at the provider conference, and the provider had some feedback on the policies, particularly as they related to the domestic violence bonus. And so in response to those concerns, we had a conference call as the executive committee to try and address some of the concerns. Those concerns were regarding some of the wording around whether domestic violence service providers had to serve sheltered and unsheltered, or whether they could serve one of those populations, and the other issue that came up that we spent a lot of time discussing was whether or not they could target a certain population. So if they could target victims of sex trafficking or other domestic violence subpopulations. And so we did recommend approve some wording changes there with the intent of making it clear that all providers did need to have a plan to serve unsheltered homeless people while they could, or unsheltered domestic violence victims. While they could serve those who were currently sheltered, they could not exclude unsheltered victims from their population. And we did allow for special project types. And so the executive committee approved the wording for those changes, and I'm happy to say that we did get one application from a domestic violence provider. So based on that. So what we are asking today is that the board ratify the executive committee's actions and in the background of your first page here, ratification is a formal confirmation or adoption of an act that has already been performed. And so the executive committee approved them, and we're just asking you basically to ratify that. Are there questions about the specifics? Yes, John.
I'll just say it's somewhat frustrating that Homebase wasn't able to help us right during the meeting last time. But I was impressed with the staff work by our staff to work with them and to bring it to the executive committee, and then your willingness to jump on it and come up with something that pretty much reflects what we had agreed on at the advisory board and still doesn't endanger our sort of position as I would look at what we're doing. I think good work. Appreciate it.
Thanks. That really accurately reflects my experience as well.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, this all.
So I move acceptance, if that's what you think.
I'll second that.
Okay. Yes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. All right. Thanks. Well, that was quick. You want to use any more of your 25 minutes?
No.
Okay, Michelle, do you want to give us some updates, please?
Yes, we are officially ahead of schedule. I'm going to mark the moment. That rarely occurs. I do have some additional updates related to the NOPA competition, both the projects competition and then the COC application and planning project application. And I've asked Kate to help me out with that first bit, the projects competition. So she has some information to report to you. Why don't you come on up to the table?
I'll just scan.
Yeah, sure.
So this year we have about 26 renewal projects that have applied for the local competition. We have four new projects. Three of those are applying for the regular bonus funding, and then one of those is applying for the DB bonus, which is the Lau Family Community Development. Under the DB bonus, we have the ability to apply for $825,000, and under the bonus funding, we have $1.2 million. So the review and rank panel was oriented this past Monday. They are currently reviewing all of the applications. On Monday of next week, Monday and Tuesday, they will be meeting to discuss, review, interview all of the programs, and they will be ranking those programs in the priority list. And that will be presented on April 16th as the preliminary priority list. And any appeals after that will be all projects seeking to appeal must submit their intent to home base by August 17th, the next day. And then all appeals are due August 20th. An appeals committee, so if you are willing to participate on the appeals committee, I will be taking volunteers, and so I'll be sending out an email to inquire. They will meet August 22nd, and then the recommended priority list will be presented to the advisory board at a special meeting on August 29th at 10:30 to 12. I haven't chosen a location yet, so I will be getting an update on that.
Thanks, Kate. For the SSF subrecipients, I just want to acknowledge the contracts team. So Kate, Stacy, and Mike did an excellent job this year in helping prepare our subrecipients' ESTAPS applications and getting all the materials that are required in for that review and process. So thank you to that team. And then I'll give you some updates on the COC application and the planning project application. As folks know, there has been interest in having greater advisory board engagement with both of those pieces of the NOFA competition. And I'm happy to say that we've kicked off a process of having weekly meetings with any interested advisory board members to go through planning project and COC application. We published a calendar that lists which topics will be covered on which dates. These are all Wednesday meetings at SSF from 12 to 1:30. Thus far, we did a kind of overview and orientation on July 18th. We focused a session on the planning project application on August 1st, which was last week. And then this week, today, we'll be focusing on two sections of the COC application, COC coordination, and COC discharge planning. Again, we sent the full schedule out to advisory board members along with a sort of guide as to what the details are underneath these broader categories. So folks are welcome to come to all the sessions or sessions that interest them in particular. And yeah, we're happy to have you. We're also following a process where after each meeting, we're putting together the notes and all the materials that were discussed at that meeting and posting them to our website in the same place where you find the COC advisory board materials. So we'll continue that practice so that folks who maybe can't come to a Wednesday meeting can check out what happened and provide their input electronically. Do folks have questions about that?
Yeah, I think it was a great addition, and thank you for doing it. It's extra work for everybody, but it allows us to have that deeper dive. I'm thinking next year we could actually start earlier and not do it every Wednesday, because it's hard to, sure, know, to make that. And I think most of the sections don't actually change that much. So it's a planning activity.
They haven't over
it's a planning years. Activity that you can really do over the course of a year or 6 months prior. So that would be my suggestion. Thank you for letting me know.
Other questions or comments?
Any comments on what Kate presented? Sounds like we've got some timeline coming up between now and the next meeting.
Yes. We look forward to folks volunteering for the appeals panel. It is it's a tough job, but it's really important. And so if we don't get volunteers, we'll be reaching out.
So some of you may be voluntold closer to the time, but I think the 17th is when you would.
The panel's meeting the
22nd.
The 17th is the due date for intents to appeal that members. Internal deadline.
Okay, we all good? And we're all feeling like the process is transparent and that everyone has adequate opportunity to come and have a voice in the planning? Good, thank you very much. Do you want any more of your 20 minutes?
I don't.
Great. Okay, well, we'll just move on to C, which I guess we'll see if Cindy, you want to start, and then
actually start.
Well, hello, everybody. I'd like to talk to you, Cindy and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some major funding opportunities that are coming towards homelessness, homeless programs very quickly. And the city, the county, and Sacramento Steps Forward has been meeting to sort of prepare for this opportunity. We want to share with you a little bit of information about the funding. Probably a lot of you have been watching and know a little bit about it already. The timeline as we understand it, and the collaborative process that we want to put together to very quickly move forward. But just to step back, the adoption of SB 850 this summer has created several opportunities that we are in a very good position to secure money through. The first is the HEAP program, which is the Homeless Emergency Aid Program, which is a block grant of about $500 million that will be available statewide to large cities and to COCs. We, based on what we're reading in the legislation, we understand that the city will be eligible for about $5.6 million directly, and the COC for up to $12.7 million. There is actually a fact sheet in your packet that was just received last Friday, which gives a little bit of detail. It's coming from the California Homeless Coordinating Financing Council, which is actually managing the allocation of these dollars. It's a commitment on the part of the state to move this money as quickly as possible. And as I think you're aware and you're seeing, this is a very, very quick process that we need to work quickly to position ourselves for. We understand the timeline in here, and we understand that the actual NOFA will be out September 5, and we're still waiting on some information to play out so we know exactly how to position for that. But in general, the money is available for local communities in the form of a block grant, as I said, to work very flexibly to deal with the homeless crisis as they see it. The kinds of categories that the money can be used for include all sorts of homeless prevention activities, criminal justice diversion, expanding services to meet the needs of homeless youth, and actually that is required, and other types of emergency aid and homeless programs. No less than 5% of the money must be allocated for youth programs. No more than 5% can be allocated for admin. And in order to participate, the city and the county will both have to adopt a shelter crisis. And the actual ordinance framework is spelled out in the information that the state is putting out. If any other cities are interested in participating, they can, but they also need to adopt this crisis ordinance. We've reached out to cities in the county to ascertain their interest, and we're certainly happy to schedule a meeting if that's helpful for them to make a decision on whether or not they want to participate. The HEAP, of course, requires a collaborative process, which we're starting today. It looks like we're going to have some time for comment and discussion. Yeah. And we have a further timeline that we'll spell out to you in a moment. But before we talk about that, I also want to mention that their SB2, which allocated recording fees for homeless programs, there will also be a NOFA issued probably in a couple weeks, sometime in August, which will make other sorts of funds available to COCs, which we think will be very compatible to the application we're putting together. We understand that it actually can be used to help improve
coordinate entry systems, which we're very interested in, and other kind of planning processes, in addition to other uses that we might find would be helpful to augment our heat proposal. So we don't know too much about that actual application yet, but we will know shortly. So we'll be folding that into the process that we're laying out for you today. So having said that, we have some time for conversation and questions today, and Cindy will talk very generally about the types of programs that we are contemplating. But before we get to that, I just want to spell out the timeline here. We would like to hold an information discussion, info gathering session the 23rd of this month. We're hoping to have it at our office of the Sacramento SIPS Board from 2 to 4. You're all invited. We'll get the word out to other stakeholders that might be interested. At that time, we'll be able to flesh out our proposal in more detail, but also gather your comments to help us inform the final product. We are looking for other opportunities to meet with interested stakeholders. I think youth groups might want to meet with specifically cities, as I mentioned. We want to bring this conversation to other meetings that are already on the books because we don't have very much time, but we're open and we really want to make this a collaborative process. So we'll gather the information this month. We'll move back to your next meeting in September with a much more fleshed out proposal, which we hope we can get your recommendation on, and then we'd like to take that to the Sacramento SIPS Board. And we're actually tentatively scheduled to go together, City, County, and SSF, to both the City Council and the Board of Supervisors for approval. We're hoping the 25th of September. So it's a very short timeline. Very short timeline. We want to work together transparently but quickly. There's going to be a lot of uncertain, well, we have to think boldly in how we put this proposal together, and we also are very committed to work with you through the implementation process to keep making sure this is the right fit and the best program for our community. With that, Cindy, I'm sure, has a lot more flesh to add to this.
We thought we would do a little bit of a teaser for some of our ideas. We see this as an opportunity for the county, SSF, continuum of care, the cities, City of Sacramento, to really work together on how to use this one-time funding. So while it is significant, it is one time. And in some ways, that's a new thing for us. The county has made significant investments in the last couple of years, as well as its mainstream programs. The city has made significant investments in other cities as well. So we're looking at how can we really understand the gaps within those investments, what's needed to really maybe thread these into more robust services and impact on homelessness. So our ideas, I will tell you what they focus on. They focus on the individual population that county has spent time and is working on a family system redesign. There are a fair amount of rehousing resources for families. It's not saying that the system is entirely robust, but we know we have far more individuals that are unsheltered. So we are looking at that as a primary focus. And we think this one-time money would be useful in both incentivizing system change, if you will, in how we look at, in how we shelter individuals, what's the access to shelters, and also primarily, how can we increase the flow through in the shelters that are publicly funded for individuals. And we can give more details, but so we're looking at possibly increased shelter, and we know the city is actually looking at that as probably the primary focus of their $5.6 million. And how can we do rehousing, increase our rehousing? We do have a flexible housing fund, but it's only for one program in the county, and we think that we can build on that concept and offer that service, a new service, that's focused on recruiting landlords, coming up with alternative ways for folks to get housed, and the actual rehousing assistance. It's a very flexible source, so we can make it work for us and offer that service for folks in shelter who are system compliant, if you will. And we think that means things like looking at coordinated entry for shelters, which is actually a requirement we haven't got to yet, at least for ESG-funded shelters. And then just being able to offer this rehousing and having it low barrier, of course. And we've had a lot of practice with that recently in county and city general fund funded shelters. And then we're looking at, we have a large unsheltered individual population. So while we can increase the flow, we think, through the capacity we have, and we can increase that capacity, we still will have unsheltered population. As Ann said, this will require a shelter crisis declaration. Both this, any city and the county will have to carefully deliberate on that. I will just say, and the papers have quoted people as saying, we will be ready to sue anyone that does this declaration and doesn't have enough shelter, something like that. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but the board and the council will have this, you know, this thing to weigh, or councils. While we want this money, you know, there is this thing that city and counties are on the hook for. And so, going back to the unsheltered population, looking at how we can offer this rehousing assistance, knowing not everyone unsheltered is going to go through shelter or needs to get the rehousing assistance they need. So programs, so connecting with programs that do some level, and this would be developed and defined, of care coordination or case management, which would include, say, Pathways, which doesn't have rehousing assistance, might include adults that are engaging in the adult protective services system. And we've also are looking at an actual jail diversion program. So it would be the first time, it would be a pilot, it would be a way for us to test that, can we offer services for people who are experiencing homelessness, engaged in the criminal justice system, but where really the services and housing are what they need. So we're looking at a small pilot program in that. So you can see, we have some ambitious ideas, but we think if we make them complementary to the work that the community knows it needs to do and wants to do, then we're doing the work we want to do. We're not making up an activity to spend the money. We're actually using it to move in the direction we want to move. So that's the general, where we are generally, but as Ann mentioned, there will be time for lots of questions and input and testing of how can we do this and what does it mean.
Between now and September, yes.
And then after. I mean, it's a very unusual state program. It's going through an agency that doesn't administer these grants. It's not with the department, it's with the agency. We know they want to just give the money quickly off their books. But you know, there will be back and forth, but we think there's probably time to adjust. I'm thinking, I guess I'm just surmising, we say we'll do this, but we may full well need to adjust along the way. Because $12 million to be spent in 2 years, I think it's about 2 years.
And
spent. We'll see what.
Yeah.
It's sort of through the language. I thought it was obligated, but.
Yeah. I thought it was spent.
But I saw both, and I went back and saw both. It's a fair amount of money to move in an effective way and to really impactful way.
So I have a couple of thoughts or questions. Seems like the city of Sacramento wants to go for this. Any other cities, and what's your thinking on the county, the likelihood of the county going for it?
We're just beginning those conversations, as is the city, and I don't know if the other cities have begun. We are thinking they will.
And is there anything we as a group can do to...
Yeah, not sue us.
Can you clarify that concern? I'm just trying to understand it a bit more.
Any kind of enforcement that of say anti-camping or something like that, that is where the touch point is. So if you declare a shelter crisis, that means there's not enough shelter for everyone, which we know is the case. And then you do that in some form, they say, we're going to lawsuit.
So fear of lawsuit is significant enough for them to...
Because
I can't speak for them. I will say...
I get it. I just
it will feed in... I mean, you have to recognize that money's not... while it's viewed as symbolic, it's, you know, sure, fear of a lawsuit is always a consideration.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
Seems like a very special opportunity to miss because you're frightened about a lawsuit.
But I honestly think, can we have some conversation with folks? And I know people sue on their own, but is it possible for the continuum to offer some conversation about, is this really what makes sense?
It doesn't seem like an effective strategy to help the people we serve.
So the concern, so the lawsuits would come if basically you're saying if you have an anti-camping ordinance and
not
you're enforcing it,
not
that's
I don't
what
want
you
to go
sued.
Into why they would sue exactly. I probably
you're
I
giving
read the article.
Too much information.
Read the article. I think we are guessing, and I don't think we know it's for this or for that exactly. That was your question as well.
Yeah,
and I think I would say I don't know. We just heard that they're getting their lawsuit ready.
So the other part of my question was. Other cities. So, I mean, I know that LA has already gone ahead with the shelter crisis adoption, and the mayor has been very strident. He's saying he's putting a shelter in every city council district and has demanded that.
So it's interesting because there's two parts of the shelter crisis law. One actually gives specific extra powers and liability protection to about 8 communities. Sacramento's not in that portion of the law. We're in the other broader portion of the law, and I'm not sure anyone has followed that one yet. And I don't want to overstate that concern, I really don't. But I throw it out as it is something folks will consider as
can you unpack that just a little bit? I mean, what I'm hearing is that LA may be more protected than Sacramento in adopting
shelter. I don't say that's why they did it, but there are two parts of the law. And several communities before this heap said you have to adopt this, said, and the only benefit of this outside of the heap is that it allows you to waive health and safety if you construct new shelter. So if you're not going to construct new shelter that needs a health and safety waiver, you would not really be seeking the shelter crisis declaration.
There's no zoning, there's no other.
And so that's those communities that wanted to do something outside of normal health and safety, they have to adopt an alternative ordinance. They have to report to the legislature annually. This is in that second part, you know, this other part of the law. There's other things they have to do, but they get more in exchange for that. In that part of the law that applies to us, it only allows this waiver of health and safety on public facilities. So it's even more restrictive on the benefits.
So there's a chance that we might have to make this shelter crisis declaration and it doesn't really do anything?
Except for allowing you to participate in the funding.
It is a prerequisite for drawing down the funds.
Okay.
So we're talking about a very substantial amount of money across 2 years for our community.
And cities aren't giving up anything in order to become eligible?
We're opening ourselves to a lawsuit.
That's it, okay.
So
if the cities participate, how much more money is available?
It's not clear how they will do that. So we've heard both you'll get proportionate if not everyone participates, and we've heard you can only participate in the funding if you do this. That is, that city or that county can only participate. So we don't know yet.
Okay, I've got a few questions. Do you know which agency at the state?
Yeah, it's on the handout. It's not. This council is now housed at the Business Consumer Housing Agency, I think it's called.
Business Consumer Housing Agency?
I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
It's what HCB is under.
Business Consumer Services. Oh, thank you. So, in my experience with unique agencies that have one-time grants, like Department of Finance, they cut us a check straight up. So it was pretty easy So hopefully, if this is similar, it would be pretty easy to get that funding. My second question, does the funding go to the continuum of care, or does it go to the cities and counties? I know you just
The city will be able to apply on their own, City of Sacramento.
City of Sacramento, yeah.
But the remainder of the funds, the 12.7, it's for the applicant entity, as we're proposing, would be the COC.
Okay, so every city and the county would need to make the declaration for the COC to get all of
the money? We don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet,
okay.
But the city has to make a declaration for the city to receive funds.
For the city to receive funds. What if it was a nonprofit agency who then was operating in the city? Would the city need to make the declaration?
It's not clear how they're going to enforce this concept that every city and the county need to declare a crisis, either to get full money or to participate. They sort of describe it as the COC then administers it or gives it to cities and counties. Sometimes they describe it that way.
But the COC could give it directly to service providers?
I think so.
And that, we need to think that through in our proposal.
Yeah.
And there also will be more information coming down the pike. You'll see in this this handout we gave you, there's actually, in the next couple of weeks, there'll be a lot more information coming out about how this is going to be structured. But there's many unknowns.
And can the money be used to construct new housing? I know you were talking about shelter, but one of the things that I'm interested in is possibly looking at like new construction of new permanent supportive housing.
One of the challenges is that is not a quick activity.
Right.
So 2 years expenditures is fairly unlikely.
But you can, you can throw $12 million at two or three projects.
We were really thinking of gaps in things. Like, yes, there is local gap missing, but really locals need to come up with that gap. I mean, this money would not go far for that.
It wouldn't go too far, but I would wonder what the difference in impact it would be between using it for temporary shelter programs versus permanent supportive housing that's going to be there for 55 years.
Right.
So,
it actually says emergency aid, so something's triggering that.
Yeah,
it's not really.
In fairness, Dr. Kassir was waiting for a question. So
I was just responding.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's under the emergency aid category. And then in other conversations, they talk about things like rapid rehousing. They don't talk anywhere in this legislation in their materials about new housing. Under SB2, there's part of SB2 that is specifically designed around housing and development of housing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to be the intent of this part of the legislation to do that. It's more of, and when we say 2 years, fully obligated, knowing that there's multiple rounds of funding, and it is believed that if you obligate and spend, you are more likely to be eligible for additional rounds of funding.
Mm-hmm.
There could be up to 3 rounds of funding.
So, just to summarize the housing one, I think we will hear you. I definitely think it's valuable to see if there's a way of supporting new housing. I hear other voices saying that that's very expensive and this will be a drop in the bucket for that. Are there other strategies? But I want to hear that. So Dr. Kassiria, and then John, and then Aaron.
So could you clarify what is meant by health and safety waiver?
For the shelters, you can waive existing building standards for health and safety, which means things like, if you were, for example, to do a pop-up structure, that's what they're called, sprung structure, that likely would not meet all of the existing code. And so, or for example, if you did tough sheds, which some communities have done without, say, with shared, maybe a shared outdoor bathroom, common bathroom, that likely would not comply. So they're actually quite complicated. I've actually spent some time with our building code and health and safety folks and saying what would we be waiving and what would we, since the county is not proposing to do this, we would not be operating that part of the waiver. The city likely would, and so it's probably a better question for the city. What kinds of health and safety waivers are you considering in your new shelter? And it's only on public facility, so if you're not doing it on a public facility,
don't apply. Mm-hmm. Does that answer?
Yeah, I'll have to follow up with that one with the city.
Well, and we'd love to hear from from you if you find anything out as the public officer. John?
Yeah, so what's the role of the advisory board? It sounds like the money is going to come and be in the bank account of Sacramento Steps Forward, but do we have particular, I mean, do you understand what our role would be or yet, or?
Well, at this point, we're certainly looking for a recommendation from you on the proposal that would be coming to you next month.
But I mean, like, do we approve something? Do we really matter in a final sense? Or are we just sort of another one of the interested groups of people?
I feel like we have a lot of say.
So, and I think the legislation is not entirely clear. It's worth looking at. It says the money goes to a continuum of care. Actually, it could be someone who previously operated a continuum of care, but then this document says to the existing continuum of care. So that goes to the fundamental question of who is the decision-making body of the continuum of care, or did they actually mean the collaborative applicant entity? Honestly, they were thinking of counties, because 75-80% of the continuum of care are counties. So every time they talk about it, they say this money's going to localities. Well, no, not actually, you know, in this case. So I don't think they've completely got it clear.
And it's something we should talk about in this process, and maybe we should identify what we think our local process should be.
I will say that it's very satisfying to hear the city of Sacramento, county of Sacramento, and Sacramento Steps Forward gathering people together to talk about how to do positive things for people experiencing homelessness. And I think we're extremely excited that that's, you know, maybe a starting point for an ongoing, you know, way to approach things.
Like a way that we all work together.
Yeah. So really
that's the commitment I'm hearing
And obviously the efficiencies, this is a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money. So the efficiencies that we could build in.
Yeah, sort of flash in the pan.
But we can make some changes that might have ongoing value beyond just
support. Sure.
So I have like two comments and a question. So first I want to just echo, so great to hear that this collaboration and this effort is existing. This really bodes well for the future of our community. I want to comment on the affordable housing comment. And I think we all know that's the problem. We also know that's the gap. And I think people go, that's too expensive. It's not enough money. In a normal project, the gap that is very hard to fill is $1 or $2 million. So it's not a huge amount of money when you're talking about gaps. If this funding won't do it, I just want that on the record, is that that's the kind of stuff we're looking for. The overall project is really expensive, but that local gap financing gives you points to get other kinds of money. And so we can't just like dismiss it because it's expensive in ongoing conversation.
Can I just say, I didn't mean to say that's why I do think it's worth looking at how this community provides local gap.
Yeah.
I think it is up to the jurisdictions to provide local gap. And if we need to augment it, we need to augment it. But that's what's happening in most communities. Mm-hmm. These communities are saying, we know projects need $1 to $2 million.
Yeah.
And that comes from
a
trust fund, a local gap, something like that.
Right. Just we need to be creative about how we solve that, because us throwing up our hands and saying projects are too expensive, we won't ever get any housing built. So I wasn't saying you're necessarily saying that. I'm just saying in the general plans, it's not that much money that we have to find for each project, but it is not available readily, so it stops the project from happening. So that's that. And then my third question is really specific to this, or fourth, whatever I just said. At B, the criminal justice diversion programs for homeless individuals with mental health needs. You mentioned the jail. That's awesome. Can we also talk about pairing it up with mental health court? We get a lot of clients in mental health court that are also homeless, and it would really help their adherence to the mental health court requirements if they could be housed, even in a rapid rehousing fashion. It's just an additional source of funding to consider.
Thank you. Imani, do you have a?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm the third or fourth supporter of this amazing, wonderful, related collaboration between.
City County and SSF. I wonder about SHRA, if there's a space there. But anyway, thank you. I'm so excited to hear this. I have two kind of unrelated comments. Number one, on that issue of risk around lawsuits, I don't have a good gauge on how real that is, but it might be worthwhile having a conversation with organizations that we believe might be the ones posing the risk, with an opportunity to provide education around cost and benefit of lawsuit versus what that does to this kind of funding. I think that would go a really long way, possible. Mm-hmm. So on the housing built units piece, again, I'm not suggesting that's not a good idea, but I think there are a lot of units that are built already that just require some creative financing to get our clients into. And we also need to look at that as a strategy with this funding and any funding that comes along, because oftentimes where we bump into problems is around the fair market rental value. It's not that people, landlords or owners, don't want our clients, they just don't want to take $700 when they could have $1,100. Right. So if there's a way to create some, I mean, we have lots of thoughts, I'm sure John has lots of thoughts on ways to, some strategies to buy that down. But anyway, it seems like something to consider.
I have a real concern about access, like in terms of human dignity, just access to clean toilets and facilities. And when I see money coming our way, the opportunity to leverage that for more infrastructure, just for people to live with dignity, even if they're on the street still, I see a great opportunity. When we were on a study mission to Austin last year, they have toilets everywhere that are made out of I-beams. They're beautiful, almost artistic structures all around the city. I think the question would be if we can leverage support from the trades and from the chamber, just get people to come in behind this and maybe bring down the cost. But I think the infrastructure, we may not be able to fix homelessness, but so we need to have a solution for public health, actually.
I was just going to say thank you for saying that, because San Diego just went through a horrendous time with a huge hepatitis A outbreak, and for a long time we were concerned that we were going to have the same here. And we actually did talk to different agencies in the cities and also county to talk about the issue we have with lack of public restrooms, and the issue that came up was cost. I believe that the city of Sacramento has made some headway. I saw something in the Sacramento Bee, but I don't know where that's at. But definitely, even though the immediate risk went down, that is still an issue. And next time it might not be hepatitis A, it might be another foodborne, waterborne illness. So I guess that should be
comment on that. John, want to say something?
Sure.
Well, I just think that you're going to be talking about bathrooms, you're going to be talking about clean water, too.
Clean water.
Because they've been making a really an effort to remove these large fountains in all of the parks and everything else. I think it would make sense to put these bathrooms in places where we already know there are cat cities. And it seems like government doesn't want to admit that they're there to the general public. So I think we're going to have to destigmatize this thing somehow. I think we need a major, probably some sort of advertising campaign to get the neighborhoods to accept this idea. It just doesn't make sense to say you can't have a tent city here where people are going when they're sleeping all over the streets. At least if you have people in tents, you can access them and you can figure out what to do next. Because everybody knows there's a lot of different reasons for being homeless. We need a triage mechanism.
So access to clean water.
But we've got to be careful not to take this one-time money and put it into something that's going to need maintenance for the next few years that we're not going to be able to sustain. Mm-hmm. So, but I do like the idea of this shelter. Whatever happened to those surface camps?
Well, we've got the circus. I think we're working on the tents.
I just wanted to mention that the city and county have collaborated on some facilities, sanitation facilities in the River District, but we've coupled it really with expanding day services offered at a county facility through a provider. But it's really targeted for folks in that district. It's not going to be an open triage. It'll be invitation only to rehousing services and facilities. Those aren't invitation only. But we are increasing access to sanitation there, but coupling it. We thought it was more actually impactful to have the rehousing services. Our winter sanctuary program in just those off-hour services, I mean, collaborated with this group, Sacramento Self-Help Housing, rehoused over 50 people with no additional money. If we expand that to a year-round, just focused on connecting people to services and rehousing, et cetera, we think we can make an impact there. So that's what that article was, and it's a collaboration between the city and county and the provider. And the River District, which, by the way, approved it, which was on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is a member of their board, by the way, right here, who approved that?
Yes. Yes.
John said something rather intriguing I'd like to touch back to. And I know it's hard to spend money in that area, but we know that the work on the social media campaign with mental health stigma has had an impact in people being more willing to access those services. In the homeless arena, it's not as, some of it is about getting people access services, but it's also about getting communities being willing to host services and being willing to reach out. And I think the stigma is very real, and that may be one of something that can be defined as a gap, and I don't want to brush past that because I think it's important.
So you're talking about the capacity of a community to embrace people who are homeless.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And people with mental illness.
And to embrace the kinds of services that are needed for those folks.
It'd be great intervention down the road here.
And I think maybe embrace might be too strong a word, but I think we do have an angry community on both sides. I think people who are experiencing homelessness are angry that they've been promised services for years and housing that doesn't materialize, and that the public is angry because of the mess and the health conditions and all of that. So that if a campaign could reduce some of that anger, just that, and to open people's minds to possible infrastructure-wise interventions like bathrooms and water could go a long way to solving some of the things that they are concerned about while not solving homelessness, might be really helpful. I think that's true.
And the stereotype.
Yeah.
And the stereotypes.
Yeah. No, that's definitely, and we know that the more exposure, the less problem. I don't want to take away from this dialogue. I do want to give staff, though, and any of our colleagues from the community an opportunity to weigh in as well, if that's all right with the advisory board.
Yeah.
So does staff or any of our colleagues here in attendance want to say anything about this or throw out ideas? Sir, can I get your name?
Yeah, I'm Jeff Tartaglia. And one of the things partly concerned is that I will offer is Los Angeles is going after pilot projects right now. What they did Monday was put one forward is for sort of a force, shall we say, compliance, dealing with it for mental health, and they've just proposed it as a pilot project. Today they're doing two more legislation, so it's a careful be concerned is this response, partly legislators, partly the community, is this, they don't see homeless going away, so they're trying other tools, and that came partly through the city, legal cities, and the others through there of pushing this forward as a program, and it's going to go to the Senate floor to be debated. But this is the last time where they're going to get appropriations, and just it is concerns and changes.
Can you just, if I was living in LA, mm-hmm. what concretely would be something that I should worry about if I'm homeless in LA, based on what you're saying?
Well, I will say I have friends down there, and you know, and I will just offer reasons for the right around LAX and Westchester. They're seeing that increase through there. and seeing the sense of RVs in that situation. So they've had to enact ordinances that, in a sense, are getting RVs, you know, removed from the streets.
I see.
You know, and that's, you know, something that it's interesting. Now, this is where a pilot project has been introduced Monday and gone through the appropriations that's going to do where you might see the ability of putting somebody through court conservatorship because they are homeless. Just a pilot, but the concern is that it's gone that direction, you know, and let's hope that we can prevent that and deal with the problem before it becomes something that we think that we have to be that way to get homeless. You know, I mean, the city of Sacramento goes through sweeps through downtown, getting homeless people, you know, so they're not visible, but as people have said, more and more of them that moved it out to Howe Avenue, they moved it to other locations in the county where they're there.
Well, yeah, so we've got a lot of people rushing in and fools rush in too, so we've got to keep an eye out for that. Thank you. Any others? Staff?
I'll just note technical assistance should be starting August 13th. So hopefully we can start getting some of these questions answered. But to give you an idea on the pace, it's literally they aren't even offering technical assistance for a few more days.
I tried
not to have a question.
Name, please.
Is it my understanding then that projects or proposals, programs will be we'll kind of flush those out prior to the proposal going in. So those all kind of have to be defined. It's not like we just apply for the money and then work it out.
We need to submit an application.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, like, that's a lot. That's a lot of work. Well, youth providers are already talking, so we're ready to meet when you guys are ready.
We will have more detail at the 23rd meeting that we're proposing at SACSIP's Ward 2-4. We'll have a more fleshed out proposal to comment upon.
Thanks, Susie. Anyone else from there? Mandy here?
You know we have partners.
Okay. Do we want to, any discussion? Michelle, you know a little bit about homelessness. Any comment you have for this?
My comment is, has already been said multiple times today, Sacramento Slips Ward is a partnership that has been developed to respond to this opportunity.
I just have one more quick comment. I appreciate the county's focus on the homeless individuals.
Actually, it's not just the county.
Okay, so it's
a partnership.
Yeah. Okay. The partnership. I appreciate the partnership's focus on homeless individuals because they certainly are the bulk of the population that we are dealing with. And I appreciate recognizing that 5% of the funding is focused for youth.
At least,
and that's what I wanted to talk about, because 5% isn't actually very much, and if we really want to make a long-term impact, we need to look at what is feeding the stream of homelessness, and if we can intervene early with young people to help them stabilize and help them deal with the issues that are leading to homelessness, we can also impact that individual population in the long term. And so when we say at least, I think that's really important, that we need to do prevention that is focused on the stream that's leading into that large population of individuals.
I think you're forgetting. I think what you need to do is slam the front door shut on new home. When rents are going up in this town, you cannot cover it with a disability check.
Yeah.
I'm in a building now that is a low income seniors building, and the rent is just about gone to the point of one more rent raise, and I'm going to be desking off the camp. So, and I believe it's in essence on an owned building. So maybe some of these publicly owned buildings that you could, I know rent control would not be a good idea in some ways in the general population, but maybe some sort of rent control on a government-owned property that is supposed to be low income. It would be very helpful to slam the front door shut on this thing, keep new ones from being created.
One of the things I didn't mention is that in the family shelter redesign, we added for the first time diversion money. So folks that are saying, I need to come into your shelter, but are actually housed, can get some assistance if they're able to stay where they are. It's a small amount. We'd like to do the same thing in this on this side, so that this fund is able to say, you don't have to become homeless, keeping in mind it is very, it's probably not really a structural solution like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a much broader problem of people need a small amount of help to stay in their housing, and yet we don't really have it across the board.
I'd just like to say what John is talking about is that's a problem. If our public-owned properties are going up above where a disability check can pay rent, we should be talking about that to someone. That's pretty terrible.
I think we need to own, we generated the data, and we need to own that we know that we are the fastest growing rental space in the state, maybe the nation. And if you look at the, we're going to have more people becoming homeless.
Right.
Dusting off their tents, whatever, tragic. And there'll be many people who've never been homeless before.
So $12 million doesn't sound like so much anymore.
No.
But I guess I just want to focus on what we can focus on. I mean, rent control is a big issue, but public housing and public owned property does not have to follow the market. You know, it really doesn't have to. There could be a decision made that it could be managed at a place where people on disability would not be rent burdened in projects that
that's the whole point.
Yeah, that's horrifying. So, yeah.
We do have a comment from the community.
Usually SHRA-owned properties actually have operating subsidies associated with them, and so you pay based on your income, so an increase in rent. So it may be, and I'm not sure where you live, you do finance privately owned properties that do have different rent structures, but anything that SHRA owns as part of its public housing inventory should have a operating subsidy associated with it. So I'm not sure. We can talk. I'm with SHRA and Susan Beasy with our development department.
Well,
oh,
thanks.
Maybe
we can touch base after the meeting. I think that's a the general concern about housing stock. Meadowview is gentrifying. We've got populations moving within our region as people come in from the Bay Area and buy our most affordable housing. So I'm gonna see if there's any more comment from the committee, and I think we'll just move to the next item, if there are time left. Thank you very much. Looking forward to this. Please see if you can make it for 23rd, right?
Correct. It's going to be more information.
It's going to be lively, hopefully. Okay. Care transitions. Well, I'm not going to take my 5 minutes. I've had no feedback whatsoever. I mean, I've not had any instances of care transition concerns from anyone.
That reflects what's really happening. I hope that reflects that there haven't been any bad situations.
I hope so too. I mean, I think the fact is we had some very strong dialogue, and we had meetings with people who we've never even met before. People who manage parts of our continuum that we've never all sat in a room with, and so I think we're on track. I don't think we should imagine that there are not going to be care transition issues. I think the corrections, criminal justice, care transition one is a big one for us. Yes, so I'm done with care transition. We've got announcements. I hope you all were able to grab the annual report. A copy is available here. It's rather dreamy. Thank you to the team for putting together such a lovely product. Thanks to Ben. Bravo. Thanks very much. And then Emily, any other announcements?
Yeah, just a quick announcement. The steering committee, the advisory board is still looking for an individual to join the board that has experienced or is currently experiencing homelessness, but someone with a young family, so someone who has small children, a small child, any gender, and so I know we sent that out, Michelle sent out the reminder to everyone, but I just wanted to make sure we all hear it and not just read it, that we are still looking for someone, because it's so important to have that voice at the table, and as we can see and we can hear, these stories are happening now, and it's just important for us to be aware of it. So please, let's do our best to try to recruit a family member, someone with a young family who has experienced or is experiencing homelessness.
The state No Place Like Home program, we're expecting them to release non-competitive funds and competitive funding for permanent supportive housing for persons experiencing homelessness with a serious mental illness. Mid-August, they'll be announcing the non-competitive funds this community is eligible for, about $5 million. And then we are able to compete on a statewide. The county is a co-applicant with developers. We are going to the board on August 24th. We've been working together with SHRA on a process that we think will hopefully developments will be interested in applying. The county commits to 20 years of mental health services. The state pays for capital financing. And we're hoping that projects will be able to leverage some operational support. And so we'll be launching everything that happens the end of the year. The state's getting all this going. We will actually be announcing funds prior to the November ballot when the use of the MHSA for this purpose needs to be validated. So they're initiating the process prior to that. We are as well.
I wonder, piggyback on what Dr. Kasserie announced the other day about air quality, just since we serve a lot of people who can't be indoors, we have an unprecedented problem this week with air quality. I think Dr. Kasserie said that ideally we should stay indoors until Friday.
So no work.
Just for those we serve, if you can get them indoors, if you can get them out of this pollution, it's really important.
You know, we've opened like cooling centers in the past when it's gotten really hot. We can't have breathing centers.
Oxygen bars. Right?
Yeah, because it's ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to the extent possible, if people can get indoors. I mean, anywhere where the air is circulated through a filter. It's obviously a challenge.
Or masks. They provide
masks. Well, we searched masks a bit.
Yeah.
It's really small.
Masks would be most helpful if you're like really close to the fire. Mm-hmm. But the kind of problems we're having in Sacramento, it's mainly the smoke and then also the very small particulate matter. So the masks wouldn't be as helpful. The best thing, as Jonathan pointed out, is to limit the time you spend outdoors. And then I know that this question has come up about people who have asthma, that couldn't we give them masks? Actually, it's not very easy to breathe through a mask. So you might aggravate the problem by making someone wear a mask the entire day.
Could you remind us of our, we have to meet, I think, later this month. Just kind of remind us what we're doing on
I think we'll have to ask our handlers for that.
Yes. On August 29th from 10:30 to 12, the location to be announced. We will be asked to approve the project priority listing that the review and ranking panel creates. This is a big annual responsibility.
Do you have an idea where that meeting will be held?
I think we're still looking for a location, and we will get that out just as soon as it's booked.
Do we need to have a quorum?
Yes, we do. It's formal action of the board. So we're tracking that closely. We really need everyone to get to that.
And then we're having a meeting at noon today, right?
Yes, they're meeting at noon today to review the COC coordination and discharge planning components of the COC application, and that is a second round.
Great, thanks very much. I guess we will adjourn. Have a wonderful day. Stay indoors if you can.
Right now, I'm going to
Yeah.